Ah, mmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. For decades, Chippendales was the destination of choice for bachelorette parties and girls' night out. But the brand's backstory is one of deceit and intrigue. Here's my Nightline co-anchor, Juju Chang.
To describe Chippendales back then, it was booze, sex, drugs, rock and roll.
The scintillating show for ladies only will leave a sellout.
It was one of the sexiest venues in history, where men took it all off.
They stripped down to G-strings, women would wave dollar bills.
And women take it all in.
This is Chippendales, where men perform exclusively for women on the dance floor.
We love it, it's great, we're having a great time.
It was the first time ever where something was completely geared to the ladies.
As women flocked to the clubs.
From the outside, we were a hugely successful multi-million dollar business. But the bigger we got, the more the problems piled up.
Little did they know that behind the scenes, there was greed.
Everything about Banerjee was about making money.
Jealousy and murder.
A man has been shot in the head in my office.
Now the real story of what happened offstage is the subject of a new series from Discovery Plus.
Behind it all is one megalomaniac who's eliminating a competition through arson and murder for hire.
Curse of the Chippendales. The documentary features former Chippendales performer Reed Scott, once the target of a murder for hire, telling his story for the first time.
What I went through, you'll never believe.
It all began in 1979, when the very first Chippendales opened on the west side of L.A.
The owner, Steve Banerjee, decided that he was going to have some male striptease.
It was an overnight success for Steve Banerjee, an immigrant from Mumbai, India.
So when you came to America, you wound up working as a service station attendant.
Yes, I didn't know nothing about cars. I never had my hands dirty before.
The popularity, I think, was the first time that the equality door was kicked open for women to get the same kind of entertainment options that men have had for years. They could be rowdy, rude, vulgar even, like men.
I think it's a great place for role reversal.
The men are allowed to go wherever they want. Why can't ladies?
Steve wanted to expand the show to New York, but he'd need help. That's when a former television producer walked through his door.
One day I get to Chippendales, I knock on the door to Steve's office, and there's someone else in the room. And Steve says, Richard, this is Nick DeNoia. He's a producer, choreographer, he's won some awards, and he's gonna be producing the show.
Yeah, let's figure out what the women want, and let's give it to them.
He wanted the production value, the lighting, the sets, the choreography, and the casting. He wanted all of this to be Broadway caliber.
The partnership between Steve and Nick became fruitful, and that's how the clubs took off, and they eventually opened up a club in New York.
But with the expansion came trouble. DeNoia and Banerjee argued over the production and casting.
They saw things differently. Nick came from what's best for the production. Steve came from what pretty boy is going to sell more calendars. I don't care if he can't dance.
In the Discovery series, Reed Scott recalls a time when Banerjee thought he wasn't attractive enough for the role.
One time, Steve Banerjee made it very clear. He pretty much let me know, you are a very good performer, Reed, but you are not a looker.
Banerjee and DeNoia even clashed over who was covered more in the press. So Banerjee decides to strike a deal with DeNoia.
He said, look, I want you out. I want the business. You can take the road show. You can keep the door. That's yours. This is mine.
He gave DeNoia the rights to tour Chippendales. Taking Chippendales on the road eventually turned out to be the most lucrative part of the business.
And he didn't realize that until it was too late.
The touring version of Chippendales becomes a success, playing to crowds of over 2,000 women at arenas and selling out seats 100% of the time. And with Nick on top once again, Steve was driven mad.
He said, I can't trust Inoya. I think he's cheating me with all these tours that he's running. I want him killed.
Banerjee contacts a man by the name of Ray Colon for help in carrying out the attack. Colon hires a second man by the name of Gilberto Rivera. Together, the two travel to the Chippendales office in New York to carry out the murder.
He walks into the Denoya's offices and Rivera shoots him once in the face. Rivera exits the offices. The assistant goes into the offices, sees Denoya lying dead on the floor, and calls 911.
A man has been shot in the head in my office.
Okay, is he conscious?
No. Oh, my God.
I was in rehearsal at Chippendales, and somebody just said, did you hear Nick Denoya has been murdered? And you kind of went, Nick Denoya's been murdered? Really?
It's very difficult to even say how I handled it. Nothing in life prepares you to handle news like that. And, you know, it's 34 years, but it still is acute.
Colon and Rivera evade police, and with nothing linking Banerjee to the crime, it was business as usual at Chippendales.
Then the next thing you hear is Banerjee buys the road rights back from the Denoya family for $1.3 million. Now you're kind of going, that's a little odd.
Meanwhile, knockoff clubs start popping up. One of them actually started by some former Chippendales dancers called Adonis. And they recruited Reed Scott as their MC.
They were directly now competing with Chippendales. So what would you expect Banerjee to do when he has a competition and he wanted these people killed?
In July 1991, Reed is in England, emceeing for an Adonis show, when he gets called off the stage mid-performance.
There are two gentlemen in suits, and they introduce themselves as FBI. They said, we believe someone is out to get you. We have intercepted a call that there has been a contract put on your life.
Steve Banerjee had gone back to Ray Colon. This time, Colon hires a friend by the name of Strawberry to take that hit on the Adonis employees.
He gave him an eyedropper bottle full of cyanide, and he told him, this is what you do. You follow him into the men's room, you hit him on the head with a hammer, and then you inject him with the cyanide. So this person, Strawberry, took all this. He flew over there, got cold feet, and he comes back to the United States, and he goes into our office, and that's how we get involved.
After hearing Strawberry's story, authorities arrest Ray Colon and question him.
Colon was down here, and he had drew this on a piece of paper that, hey, I'm down here. The person you really want is up here.
That person, Steve Banerjee. So the FBI devises a plan to use Colon to get to Banerjee.
We're going to construct a ruse where we're going to take Colon out of the country, make believe that he has become a fugitive. Once he gets overseas, he'll call Banerjee.
The two eventually meet up in Switzerland, where Colon finally gets Banerjee to talk freely. Banerjee had no idea the conversation was being secretly recorded by the FBI.
We hear Banerjee confess to his complicity in hiring Ray Colon for the murder of Denoya. They talk about the attempted murders of Reed Scott and other dancers. And we were able to get the evidence that we needed against Banerjee.
In September 1993, Banerjee is arrested. In a deal with prosecutors, he pleads guilty to racketeering, which included arranging Denoya's murder. But the day before his sentencing, something shocking happens.
We were on the courthouse steps when somebody came out and said, there will be no sentencing. Banerjee committed suicide last night. I felt robbed of the satisfaction of seeing Steve brought in chains and brought to justice for what he had done.
He didn't get the punishment he was deserved. He didn't serve the time for Nick Denoya, for destroying lives, for trying to kill people. He got out easy. He was a coward.
Despite the shadow cast by his dark chapter, the legacy of Chippendales prevails.
There was a lot more history there. 10 years of history. 10 years of success.
Oh, I think the success of Chippendales triumphs no matter what. The patina of success that Chippendales has, I think, is pretty unblemished.
Great too.
Our thanks to Juju. Curse of the Chippendales begins streaming on September 24th on Discovery+.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Tarana Burke is a survivor and an advocate. The woman who started the Me Too movement long before it was a hashtag is now fully telling her story. Here again is my Nightline co-anchor, Juju Chang.
If you are ready, let me hear you say Me Too. Me Too.
I've told my story in sound bites and in little pieces.
Hey, hey, go.
But I've never been able to actually tell my story.
Tarana Burke is the creator of a movement that shifted the world with just two small words, Me Too.
Me Too is initially about survivors finding each other, seeing each other, building community with each other, and saying, I see you, I hear you, I am you.
Me Too originated in 2006 to help heal sexual assault survivors in underprivileged communities. But it took off in a viral firestorm more than a decade later. A rallying cry for women and men fed up with blatant abuse of power and sexual harassment, sparked by actress Alyssa Milano's post. If you've been sexually harassed or assaulted, write Me Too as a reply to this tweet. It's a day that Burke remembers vividly.
I'm a black woman from the Bronx, in my 40s. I thought nobody's gonna believe that I have been doing this work for a long time under this name for the same reason.
You started seeing the emotional responses that women were having.
Yeah.
And you realized it was working on some level.
Oh, yeah.
In her new autobiography, Unbound, the community organizer tells the story of her own sexual assault, raw and unfiltered.
Tell me about the seven-year-old Tarana.
Well, seven-year-old Tarana was like most seven-year-olds, right? Happy, joyous, playful. And then this person came and took that from me and chose me for whatever reason to inflict this violence upon. And I felt complicit in that violence. I didn't feel like a victim. I felt like somebody who had done something wrong.
Tarana kept the abuse secret for years, the aftermath of that trauma eating away at her spirit.
Those years of silence really restricted me. It made me feel like I did not have a voice that was big enough or strong enough or important enough to put out in the world.
It became increasingly clear to Tarana that sexual misconduct is pervasive in all corners of society. In 2019, we spoke to single mom Kristen Sellers, who told us she'd been sexually harassed by her housing inspector, a man who had the power to evict her. She found the strength to speak out by filing a lawsuit.
We give them power when we be quiet.
That's what I've learned and through this whole ordeal.
Sellers' case was settled for $2.7 million. Her alleged abuser denied all the claims. But it was the avalanche of bombshell allegations in Tinseltown that would come to absorb the Me Too spotlight.
Now, though, to that ABC News exclusive, Ashley Judd telling her story.
Dozens of A-list actresses began breaking their silence as well, revealing the toxic and unsafe underbelly of Hollywood. Most infamously, the exploits of disgraced movie mogul and now convicted sex offender Harvey Weinstein.
It's a continuation of an ongoing structural problem, right? When Me Too went viral and the focus was so much on women in Hollywood, and for women of color, particularly black women, who have such high rates of sexual violence, indigenous women who have such high rates of sexual violence, the problem is not getting any better.
The impact of those initial outcries and the investigations they sparked still reverberating in present day.
As you probably know, I'm stepping aside as your governor.
In the Cuomo case, I try to get people to focus not on just the resignation, but on the investigation and on the disclosure, right? Lindsay Boylan having the courage to talk about it is the progress. Tish James investigating is the progress. I am just astonished that we are at this place in such a short period of time.
Cuomo has denied all sexual harassment allegations against him. Over the years, Tarana's fought relentlessly on behalf of fellow survivors. But it's her own story of struggles and triumphs that's front and center today. A single mom at 24, Tarana's relationship with her own mother was fraught. But her mom made all the difference in a crucial moment. This is how Tarana described seeing her rapist for the first time in 30 years while with her mother.
She asked me if I was all right. I told her that I was shook up. Maybe he just didn't recognize me because he hasn't seen me since I was a very little girl, I said. No, he didn't recognize you because you turned out to be a smart, beautiful, accomplished woman, despite him trying to take that from you.
You got me crying in my own book. Emotional to think about it. It was exactly what I needed in the right time, and I was so grateful. We never stopped needing our mothers. She is such a big part of me being unbound. She's a big part of my liberation.
In healing her own mother-daughter relationship, the 48-year-old breaking the cycle with her own daughter, who's currently blazing their own trail of activism.
They demand to have the kind of joy and freedom and just, I don't know, a liberated life in ways that I didn't know to demand at that age.
Kaya, who identifies as non-binary, is also a survivor of sexual abuse.
It was devastating, but I also felt uniquely qualified to stand up for my baby.
What was it, do you think, that finally allowed you to have the courage to say, me too?
An understanding that came from inside of myself, but also really from God, right? The universe. I tell people all the time, the most important person you have to say me too to is yourself.
And finally tonight, Gavin Roberts turned 12 this week, and there was only one thing he wanted for his birthday. He asked for the COVID vaccine. On the day he became eligible, not one day more. You see, Gavin's father, Rob, a Glen Ridge, New Jersey police officer, died of COVID back in April of 2020, before there was a vaccine. Gavin said his dad went to all of his hockey games, he was his baseball coach, and his best friend. Gavin said getting the vaccine is what his dad would have done if he had the chance.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.